About 500 BC, Confucius wrote down a collection of sayings about living life in the here and now, teachings called Ru. In his Ru, there is nothing much spiritual, nothing much about God. He stressed the importance of family and social harmony and hard work. And these values are still strong in Chinese society today and many Asian societies. You'll see the outline today is blank. Someone mentioned this to me at the 8 o'clock church. I said, maybe you could draw a picture. He said, what of a dead fly? And you'll see what that's about in a little while. But you'll have a choice of a fly or a snake or a horse or a bird or an axe or many other things. See what you can come up with. All through Ecclesiastes, the teacher has been making observations about life, like Confucius. Then he gives some teaching, then he makes more observations, then he gives more teaching, and so on. Like Confucius, the teacher gives truths about living life here on earth, not very spiritual. His focus is on the here and now, on life under the sun, as he calls it. And here in chapter 10, we're in the middle of one of his teaching sections, where he is telling proverbs, wise sayings. Now, in one way, proverbs is exactly what we'd expect from a wise teacher. He knows what life is all about. He knows what are good ways to live and what ways are bad and foolish. But in this book so far, the teacher has repeatedly said that life under the sun is all meaningless. It all comes to nothing. Whatever you achieve in life, you can't take it with you. You'll leave it behind for somebody else. Naked we come into this world and naked we leave it. If that is true, then how can the teacher tell us that one way of living is better than another? Why does it matter how we live? If the good person and the bad person, the wise and the fool, the rich and the poor, all end up in the same place, we all end up dead, he tells us, and then we are forgotten. So if that is true, how can the teacher tell us that there is a right way to live, when it will get us nowhere in the end? Before we deal with that big problem, let's look at some of the proverbs in this chapter. Chapter 10, verse 1, here are the dead flies. As dead flies give perfume a bad smell, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honour. It seems that a lot of good can be undone even by a small amount of something bad. And we see this often. Breaking something lovely and beautiful is much easier than carefully making it. The hospital I built in Kenya took over 10 years. Lots of effort and sweat by many, many people. It greatly affected a community of over 100,000 people and had a big impact on their lives. But two or three young men could also greatly impact all those people. And they could achieve it quickly with little effort. All they needed to do was rent some guns, some AK-47s, which were readily available, then come to the clinic and start shooting. That would be the end of it. Not much effort required, not much time, just a few minutes, and no sweat on their part. Destroying the clinic would have an equal, if not greater, impact to building it and running it. That never happened, thanks to God, at my clinic. But some boys used to rob another busy clinic in my early years there. They robbed it with guns, and they even shot a staff member, and that clinic did close. Verse 1 goes on to say, a little folly outweighs much wisdom and good work. It is much easier to have an impact being destructive than constructive. Much easier. Verse 2, the heart of the wise inclines to the right, the heart of the fool to the left. Even as fools walk along the road, they lack sense and show everyone how stupid they are. A wise person, it seems, naturally chooses the better option, and a fool naturally makes dumb choices. Down to verses 8 and 9. Whoever digs a pit may fall in it. Whoever breaks through a wall may be bitten by a snake. Whoever quarries stones may be injured by them. Whoever splits logs may be endangered by them. You can do good work, constructive work, like digging a needed pit or knocking down a wall to build something better. But often it ends up not just being difficult, but harming you. Most of my attempts at being a handyman are like that, with me needing at least a band-aid. I can remember building a pergola when I was in Canberra, holding up a large beam to bolt onto the side of the house under the gutter. And it fell onto my shoulder and bounced off my shoulder onto an outdoor table, taking a big chunk out of the table. Doing good and constructive things sometimes can hurt. There are no guarantees in this life that doing good and constructive things will end up well. On average, they do. On average, wise decisions make for a better life. But there are no guarantees in this life. Down to verses 12 to 14. Words from the mouth of the wise are gracious, but fools are consumed by their own lips. At the beginning, their words are folly. At the end, they are wicked madness, and fools multiply words. It seems fools start off saying dumb things, then finish saying even worse things, and then they just keep talking, not having the sense to stop. Verse 18. Through laziness the rafters sag, because of idle hands the house leaks. Being lazy, it seems, is not only bad for you, but it's also bad for things around you. Verse 19. A feast is made for laughter, wine makes life merry, and money is the answer for everything. There are good things in this life, such as food and wine. We are not to think that everything under the sun is bad, or that you're not supposed to enjoy life if you can. Even money can be good. It solves a whole lot of problems. And verse 20, do not revile the king even in your thoughts, or curse the rich in your bedroom, because a bird in the sky may carry your words, and a bird on the wing may report what you say. So we're to be careful what we say and where we say it, especially about powerful people, or it could get us into trouble. I have a habit of saying things before I think about it. Whether it's wise to say it and who might be listening. I did this the other day and a friend gently said to me, there are some things you should not say out loud. The teacher is not saying extraordinary things, is he? Mostly just common sense and things we can usually agree with. The teacher is telling us good things about living life under the sun, and we would expect such a wise man to teach wise things about life. But, to come back to our problem, he has already said it's all meaningless. More than 30 times he said this. He says life under the sun is like chasing the wind, because you can't take even your greatest successes with you. It all gets left behind, left to someone else, and you end up dead and then forgotten. If all that the teacher has said is true, and it is, how can the teacher say this way is better than that way? Well, the teacher is telling us only about life under the sun. Rarely does the teacher bring God into it, which would be life beyond the sun. That's not his aim. He's not telling us about God. He's telling us about life here as most people live it. And life under the sun, as most people live it, doesn't add up to much. I think it's possible to misunderstand the teacher. He says nothing under the sun can give meaning or lasting satisfaction or contentment, not wealth or riches or pleasure or even his great wisdom. We might be tempted to say, that's not true. He's exaggerating. Things down here do have meaning, but that's not to listen closely enough to him. The teacher says that nothing under the sun, nothing down here gives us meaning because it can't. It's only made like us. And at the same time, he can say that some things are good because they are. They do affect us and they make life better. And some bad things will make our life worse, which is why he writes these proverbs to help us live. For example, even in this chapter in verse 19, the teacher says that food and wine can give pleasure and money can solve problems. But can you live for food and wine? Can you live for money? They may be good for us for a time, but can you live for them or expect them to really satisfy you? Not at all. None of these has the ability to give meaning to our lives. None can give us true satisfaction or contentment. For meaning and purpose and satisfaction and contentment, we need to look beyond the sun to the maker, not to the made. For meaning, you need God. And this is where we're going to move to the New Testament of the Bible. The New Testament teaches that the only way to God is Jesus. That means life without Jesus is meaningless because life without Jesus is life without God. It is merely life under the sun, among the other stuff that God has made. You might have everything this world has to offer: power, wisdom, wealth, possessions, great pleasures. But if you don't have God, you don't have Jesus who gives us access to God, you actually have nothing, because none of that will last. You can't take it with you, and that is why when Jesus appears, he says he has good news, in contrast to Ecclesiastes. He wants to tell us things of God, how to be right with God. Getting right with God's stuff does not compare to getting right with God himself. And when Jesus tells us good news, it is not a list of things to do and things not to do. Instead, in places like Luke 15, Jesus tells us a love story of a father whose child leaves him, and yet the father waits lovingly for the child, wanting so much for his child to return to him. And in John chapter 3, Jesus tells us that God so loved the world that he rescued it. He rescued it by sending his son at great cost and sacrifice. The good news of Jesus is a love story, where God loves us at great cost to himself and wants us only to want him. He will not force anyone to love him. If we really want only what is available under the sun, only what won't last, and not the God who made it all and gives it all, then God will let us have that and be without him forever. But he woos us like a lover through his Spirit in our heart. He has put eternity in our hearts so that we might seek him. And if we turn to him and want him, we find he has lovingly done everything needed for us to be rescued by him. We find his wonderful rescuer, Jesus Christ. And the more we learn of this good news, the more we find ourselves loving God and loving Jesus, the one he sent. We even find that that love spills out of us towards each other. So we want to do what's good for each other, even when it costs us good things under the sun, even if it means missing out on good stuff. With Jesus, we find we want him and we want God more than we want God's stuff. The things of this world grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. It's a hymn we sometimes sing. Many people are living as if what we see is all there is, as if life under the sun is all there is. They need to read Ecclesiastes. I've never read Ecclesiastes with someone who isn't a Christian, but it's the place they need to go to. There is life under the sun. There are good things under the sun. There are good ways of living under the sun, and there are bad ways of living too. But there is also more than just life under the sun. And the more is God himself through Jesus. And that good news is a story of love. Let me finish by praying. Please pray with me. Father, thank you for this book of Ecclesiastes. Thank you that it is so depressing and yet so real to life and so true. Thank you that there are good things in this world and they come directly from your hand. Help us to enjoy them, but not live for them or chase them. Help us to live for you and chase you. Help us to see that everything else is chasing after the wind, meaningless, unsatisfying, and most importantly, it is unacceptable to you and offends you. Thank you for your Son, our rescuer, who lets us have a true, intimate relationship with you, a relationship that is so wonderful it is beyond our imagination and will last forever. Thank you for your Spirit, who helps us to turn to you and to love you. And may the things of this world, even the best it has to offer, grow dim in our eyes compared to you. Amen.